Welcome to the 35K podcast.
In this episode, we talk with Cornelius Borromboyo about his debut film 1208 East of Bucharest. And we are happy to welcome Variety film critic Jay Weisberg for a short introduction on the Romanian New Wave and Borromboyo's contribution to it. The interview took place digitally on Thursday, the 6th of May. Enjoy.
Hi, I wanted to introduce you to Paolo. He's going to moderate the event with me tonight.
I will try.
We're going to do this together. And yeah, Paolo.
Hi, everyone. As Jan already said many times, I'm Paolo. I will be your host tonight with Jana. And we have somehow some special way to do 35K tonight. We have, of course, Cornelio Borromboyo as a guest that I wonder if he's in the room already. Cornelio, are you there?
Yes. Hi. Ah,
hi, Cornelio.
Sorry, just a second. Okay.
Oh, now I see you. Nice to see you. It's a long time that we don't catch up. Yeah, how are you?
Fine. Just, home. It's late. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Cornelio. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Yeah.
It's very good that Cornelio somehow already introduced our second guest. I mean, there is no first or second in this case. But our other guest is Jay Weisberg, is film critic from Variety, the American magazine. And is also director of the Pordenone Silent Film Festival, which is an amazing, wonderful festival that I hope will be able to be live again after this pandemic. I sound like a broken record, but we all wish this for all the events and for everything. So to Cornelio, to Jay, and to our audience, we will begin with Jay giving a little bit of an introduction to the Romanian New Wave. I decided to let Jay completely free about what he wished to discuss, so I'm also not knowing exactly what to expect, but I think he can give us a very fresh and interesting introduction. And afterwards, this will take about 10, 15 minutes. Afterwards, we will start our deep conversation with Cornelio. So, Jay, the word is yours.
Okay. Thank you, Paolo. Thank you to 35K for having me here. Let's hope I can make this fresh. As you all know, the name of Cornelio's film in English and also the German title is basically 1208 East of Bucharest, but the Romanian title is more like Did It or Did It Not Happen? The same, in a sense, can be said about the Romanian New Wave, and that's something that for many years, even from the very beginning that the label was given to this group of films and filmmakers, everybody began arguing about whether the label was accurate or not. So that's what I'm going to want to talk about a little bit now. Labels are really useful. They're really, really useful, especially if you're trying to market anything outside of its own country. However, the people who are being labeled really don't like it, and for a good reason, because the whole concept of the Romanian New Wave made it sound as if everybody was very homogenous, that all of these young filmmakers are making films in the same style with the same themes. And if you look at something, for example, like 1208 East of Bucharest and connected to Death of Mr. Lazarescu and connected to 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days, you see very different directors making very different kinds of films on all sorts of levels. So we have to be careful when we talk about a Romanian New Wave, just as we have to be careful, for example, about talking about the Arab Spring from 10 years ago. It depends on who's using the term and how you're using it. I think it's a useful thing to use because it helps us begin to create some kind of category and to give us the framework in which to discuss this. But the moment that we begin to think of everybody as the same is the moment that we get into all sorts of problems. People were at the time, certainly, and I'm talking about the early 2000s, saying, where did all of this come from? How did this suddenly explode? I remember at the time thinking I had heard the great Italian director Francesco Rosi saying that you need 15 years after a trauma to really process what happened in any kind of meaningful artistic way. And that was very revelatory to me when I heard Rosie say that in an interview. I still believe that that's very true, but of course, at the same time, we can't necessarily squeeze everything into it. Many people begin to talk about the Romanian New Wave beginning with Cristi Puiu's first film, Stuff and Dough, which was from 2001, which premiered in the Quinzaine at Cannes that year. Puiu, who was influenced by Jim Jarmusch, also was very influenced by Lucian Pintilie. Going back a little bit, when Stuff and Dough came out in 2001 at Cannes, it didn't really get that much attention. My colleague Dan Finaro was one of the very few people on the international film scene who was talking about that this is something different, something fresh. He specifically talked about the crude language. And language is a really key element if we're talking about the Romanian New Wave. You certainly hear it in 1208 East of Bucharest, how language is being used, how street language is being used. And that continues all the way up to today. If you look at Radu Juda's films as well, he too is of course, he won the Golden Bear this year. It's also important to underline that Radu's film from this year and Corneliu's film from 2006, both have the same cinematographer, Marius Panduru. So there's a nice sense of continuity as well, which we should also be thinking about. But anyway, getting back to Stuff and Dough, 2001, as I said, it didn't really take hold. Yes, it played in Cannes, in Kanzen. It had a certain small amount of attention and then was forgotten. Flash forward a little bit. Meanwhile, Pintilie is still making films, but flash forward a little bit further and The Death of Mr. Lazarescu in 2005, also in Cannes, which was Cristi Puiu's second film. That was the first film that really made people suddenly take notice. What very few people talk about, however, is that, and I was at this screening in Cannes, a lot of people walked out. A lot of people walked out. They had no clue what Puiu was doing. They found the film was too long. It was too boring. Nothing was happening on screen. What's going on? And they left. Now, I doubt any of the people who left are going to tell you that they left. And I'm not going to name names. But when you're at the beginning of some kind of movement, often, you know, you don't know what you're getting into. And for people who are more conservatively stuck in a more conservative vision of what cinema is, it's very difficult, of course, to suddenly be faced with something that feels so different and so fresh. Now, why are these films different and fresh? Again, going back to language, which is so important. A depiction of a society that for all of the celebration of the revolution in 1989, so little had changed. And that was something that needed also desperately to be addressed. And what's wonderful about so many of the people who are making films, specifically Corneliu, specifically at that time, Cristi Puiu, sorry for underlining at that time, was also an approach to narrative, because the narrative comes out of what seems very banal. It comes out of a construction of a society derived from language, derived from common conversations, that seems to not really be leading to many places, but then suddenly has a bang. Corneliu's film, Police Adjective, the film he did after 1208 East of Bucharest, is a perfect example of that bang. But you also get it very strongly in 1208 East of Bucharest. Now, when you compare these two films, for example, and many others, to 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days, which was the next year, 2007 in Cannes, of course, it won the Palme d'Or. And suddenly everybody's saying, oh my God, something's happening in Romania. We've got to be paying attention to it. There's such different films. There's such different ways of looking at how something is being constructed. But we have to think about what's going on in terms of a picture of society, a picture of, one can say, a failed revolution, and just a shift from a more conservative, traditional way of making films. It's also important to underline that these films, for the most part in Romania, were not successful at all. really at all. And certainly at that point, one of the problems with the Romanian film industry was there was no industry. A healthy industry, of course, is an industry where you have art house on one end and popular crap on the other, which is driving the money that's coming into it. It doesn't have to be crap. I'm sorry. I like popular films too. But what I'm saying is there needed to be a diversity of filmmaking, and it took a very, very long time for Romania to get there. Instead, what was happening was the films that were coming out of the country all tended to be art house, and that was a very bad thing for the industry at the time. I'm going to share my screen for you for a moment, because I also want to use this to, I've got very little more time here, but I want you to see also one of the issues that so many people had with how do you even market these films. The poster that I'm showing, for those who are in the podcast, there are two posters on the screen right now. One is the German language, German release of The Death of Mr. Lazarescu. You've got a hospital gurney with two cats on it. It's very enigmatic, shall we say, and very clean. On the right-hand side, we've got the most bizarre publicity photo, and I still don't know why Christy Puiu even allowed this photo to go out. You've got everybody in their hospital garments. You've got, you know, the ER people. Everybody is looking, big, huge smiles on their faces, looking at the camera. It looks like a hilarious comedy. And in fact, when it was marketed in the US, they were marketing it as the comic hit of the year. Really? I mean, yes, it's very funny. It's very funny. It's also a dark comedy. It's deeply dark. It's about, we're watching this man die over the course of about two and a half hours. So I brought in all sorts of various themes, bringing together different issues here, basically to say that the Romanian New Wave did exist. It continues to develop on its own. It continues to develop, I think, in a healthy way. And what I mean by that is that people have gone off. They're shedding the idea of we somehow are supposed to be making films in a collective way or in something that's stylistically similar. I think everybody has basically thrown that out, which is great, and making films that are more true to how individuals develop, rather than how a country develops or how a film industry develops. And that too is another sign of something that is healthy. One last thing that I haven't added also is Romania has an amazing acting tradition, theatrical acting tradition, not just in the city, in the capital of Bucharest, but in regional cities as well. And that also has been a crucial thing that has fed the Romanian cinema in general, with an amazing variety of superb actors whose understanding of naturalism has contributed to a great deal in how these films convey their ideas. So with that very, very brief, very inadequate description of what is the Romanian New Wave, or maybe one can say what was the Romanian New Wave, I leave this up to Corneliu now.
Thank you so much, Jay. Thank you for this great introduction. I think we all got a new insights on the Romanian New Wave. But now Paolo is going to start.
Yeah, thank you, Jana. And thank you, Jay, again for this amazing introduction. I think Jay gave already a lot of inputs, a lot of idea of what we could discuss. So thinking about what Jay said, I want to ask you, maybe it's a provocative question, maybe it's not, but this Romanian New Wave, a force to sound of force, did it happen? But especially for you, from your point of view, how did you leave the way of being inside, in a way, a movement, or like, as Jay said, a label of cinema? What does it mean for you, this Romanian New Wave?
Yeah, it's when I was a student, I saw the first time Stuff and Dough, the film, the first film of Cristi Puiu, and influenced me a lot because at that time in the school we're talking about our teachers. They were more into a vein of like, say, let's say Kusturica or Russian classical Tarkovsky cinema, that And also at that time, we didn't have so much access to, like today, with at films from abroad. So mainly we had the Cinematheque in Bucharest. And after that, it was a sort of black market of VHS. But it was not so big, you know. So the first film of Cristi Puiu, I remember I was, I think, in the third year. I like it a lot. In my school, there were like a lot of people that they didn't like it, and but doesn't matter. And for me, it was also I was growing with the films of Lucian Pintilie. It was another very good director, Mircea Daniliuc. And there were afterwards in the Romanian cinema, there are a few films like that. They are brilliant. There is one by Liviu Ciurlei and Alexandru Tatos. So Romanian cinema has a certain type of history, let's say, you know, it's not very known outside. But the first film of Cristi really impressed me. And I think, it was something that, in a way, it was dealing also with a certain type of topic, you know, normal people, let's say, people. I can say that it was a big influence for me. Afterwards, of course, I'm feeling from inside, I think we are different, you know, each one of us has his own way or own voice at one point. Yeah, we could see that the films, they are more and more different, you know. But in the same time, I feel in a way, that I'm a part of something, you know. Of course, it's not a wave in a classical term, because we didn't have a program behind us. But I think it was a generation that it was growing in communism. And afterwards, I was a teenager, but after the others, maybe they were 20, max 10, 20, you know, years old. So, and almost all of them, I think they tried to do something else before, other studies, you know, and after that they came to cinema. So I feel in a way close to them, you know, in terms of, passion of cinema. Yeah.
Somehow I'm also curious to know, you've grown up in the town where the film takes place, basically. Vaslui, sorry if I pronounce it wrongly. How do you pronounce it?
It's okay, Vaslui, yeah.
Yeah. So when you were a kid and you were growing up, I mean, you know, it's, we have a lot of filmmakers also now in the room, a lot of film students, and we all started from our little reality of getting to know cinema. In your case, in this small town, as we saw it in the film, how accessible was cinema back then, before you moved to Bucharest and before you started making films? How were the 90s?
As a teenager, I saw a lot of VHS films. You know, it was Bruce Lee, American Ninja, all these things. It was during communists, it was a huge, big market of VHS. Yeah, I saw a lot of films like that. After that, I was studying first mathematics, and after that, I applied to a school of... I went in Bucharest to study management. So, yeah, I didn't think at all to do cinema till the age of 19, I think, in the first year, in Bucharest. A cousin of mine told me at one point, okay, because he was, he had a contract in Canada, and he stayed in Bucharest like six months. And he told me, I will show you some things in Bucharest before I'm leaving for Canada. Once we went to the Cinematheque and we see La Dolce Vita, we have seen it, and I like it so much, and I start to go by my own afterwards. So yeah, mainly my culture in cinema when I was a kid, it was mostly from time to time we used to go because we have two theaters in the city, you know, and I was going there, quite often, let's say twice a month, maybe, to see cartoons or Romanian films from that time, popular films.
Going a bit closer to your debut film somehow, but still talking about your hometown and about the people that we see in the film, I'm wondering, how much are they inspired by your memories or by people that you really met? Because those characters, let me tell you, they are extraordinary, and somehow I can see that your approach is very equal to them somehow. Like in a way, I see a lot of poetry, a lot of beauty in the way you show this town as well, and the people of this town. Each of them have a very particular identity and stories. So I'm curious to know if it's something also autobiographical in this, in those characters.
Yeah, you know, because first I saw a real TV show in my hometown, you know, small TV station, local station, and they were speaking. That was the question, you know, if it was or not revolution in Vaslui. And at one point they were talking, and they arrived at this debate around the time, you know, around 1208 east of Bucharest. And at that time, when I was watching the show, I get nervous at one point. After that, I laugh. After that, and at one point, that it was happening, I think, in when I was 20, maybe. And I stopped the TV, you know, and I said, okay, you can talk like that about the revolution, you know. So, but the story stays into my mind. And in a way, I said all the time, I have this image of these three characters that they are in an empty railway station, you know. And I felt in a way like my characters, because it was, I think, this switch, you know, the revolution. If we are looking in the dictionary, we think that if it's happening a revolution, all it will change the next day. And we never count about this period, long period sometimes of, because by the book, you know, each time it's a revolution, after that it's a contra-revolution, that's history. And after that, in fact, the results of a revolution, you could see it in maybe in 100 years. So, I felt in a way like these characters, that they are living in a sort of uncertain time, you know, and nothing solid, you know, nothing that you could grab in a way, you know.
And
if you want, like an alter ego, I was thinking of the camera guy, you know. That guy, it was in that four, I choose to shoot the... almost like a first person, you know, the TV station, because after that, it's a story behind. After that, he wants to make some shots, he's not so good, and after that, he let the camera just to record it, because he's not happy anymore. So I was trying by that to reproduce, in a way, the feelings that I had when I saw the TV show, you know, the real TV show.
Talking about the characters, but also talking about the actors, as Jay said, there is a very good tradition of actors also coming from theater. And I wonder back then, I mean, there are some actors in this cast that I know made films before, but I also wonder that they were probably non-professional actors, maybe. I wonder this camera guy, if it was a young actor or how you choose him. But my question is actually another. My question is, I'm very interested for you to share to us how you work with actors. Maybe you can tell us a little bit, also what you learned from yourself in this, from the first movie to the last one, in the way you work with actors, in the way you work with people, in the way you choose people.
This was a particular film because we started to rehearse the TV show. And the TV show, it was important. We did it theatrical, you know. We made it all through the way, you know. And after that, we split it in parts. And after that, I was rewriting. We did that for me. That was the key, in a way, to have this. And I was not happy with the text, because I felt it that there are some gaps, there are some themes that they are not coming. So, because it was like, for me, it was like a sort of a lot of themes that they have to come from time to time, and each one with his own obsession. So mainly we rehearsed 2 weeks, just the scene, the TV scene. And in the meantime, I was rewriting. So I split it in five parts. And after that, we did it each time when, for example, we shoot the first, let's say, 5 minutes of the TV show. And after that, the second day, when we arrived from minute 5 to minute 10, we started from the beginning. And if you look at the last 5 minutes of the film, in fact, when I was shooting that, in fact, I will rehearsal, they will say all the text from the beginning. I wanted to have them exhausted at the end, you know. So we did a few shots. We did two or three like that. And after that, we did just the last part. It was something that, in a way, I invented for that particular script, because, to make 45 minutes with three people that they are sitting on a table, it was a challenge for me, you know. And otherwise, I did, of course, the way of working, it's, I think that's interesting because each film is different, you know. So I like to be very open. I like to work. Sometimes I work with non-professionals. I think in all my films, there is a mixture between professional actors, non-professional actors. I think I have that in all my films. And even in the way that I'm working with actors, I'm trying to be very open with one of them. Let's say maybe I will work and speaking about the female of the character, the things general, maybe the body language of the character. And with the others, I'm very precise and I'm focusing on the text, for example. So I'm not using the same method for all the actors. And I like to do that. And what is interesting when we have a shot with, let's say, two or three people inside, they are actors that they are very good on the first take. They are actors that they are very good on the fifth one. And they start to grow from that one. And in the casting, in the process, I have to realize all that, you know. And that for maybe when I do a casting, it takes a lot of time. But also, I like to, you know, at one point, if I see an actor that inspires me, I could, and in a way that I'm waiting for an actor to give me something maybe that I didn't think about, you know.
Yes. I thank you.
If my English is not very good, or if you feel that you don't understand something, you could ask me, please.
No, it's perfect. All clear till now.
Very clear.
I just want to remind again the audience, if you have questions, please send it to 35K Sandra Popescu. She will collect the questions and you will have the chance to address it to Corneliu at the end.
Yes.
So please, we really encourage that because we want to make this dialogue also open to you all.
Yes, because otherwise we're going to start to repeat ourselves at some point. I also have another question. I was wondering about the role of television, not only in the film, because in the film it's super strong, obviously, but also in your life and maybe in when you grew up and the influence of television, not film, not cinema, but television on you and your filmmaking. Is that something that you would connect to that film as well? Or did that...
No, the revolution, in fact, it was something intermediate by the television, you know. In a few cities, there were people that went out and they fight. But for most of the people, it was that was the intermediary, you know, element between the revolution by its own and the people. I was also watching that when I was a kid, and I see all these images with Ceausescu, and they were like maybe 2 weeks very, very, very tense, and
can you maybe describe it a little bit further from your perspective, these 2 weeks of television?
Because you're watching like first you see the Ceausescu leaves the power, and after that it was his trial, he was executed. You never knew at that point what it would happen. Maybe they will come back, you know. It was like a thriller in a way. And at 14 years old, and it was the society, it was quite strict, you know. I remember that I was with another kid from my school. We were walking it was happening after the revolution. It was starting in Timișoara, but not yet in Bucharest. So there were a lot of rumors. With a colleague of mine, we were on the street, and he told me, "You heard about Timișoara?" I heard, and we were speaking a little bit about. And after that, we said, "Okay, let's stop because we arrived at the school and we can't speak anymore." You know, because even us, like kids, we were in a way paranoiac. It was all this. My parents, for example, they were listening Europa Liberă. Or Voce America, you know, these radios based in Western countries, which they were speaking about Romania. They were asking us, me and my brother, you know, not to telling to the people outside, you know, that were speaking about that, you know. And it was that moment where, yeah, I think you have this feeling that all it will change next day, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, you have the impression like Romania, it will be next day like America, you know, which was the the heaven on earth for us, you know.
And do you feel it's still this way of imagining, this way of thinking for people? I mean...
No, that's in a very particular moment, I think, and very short moment. Because after that, you know, you could see it and things there, the life goes on and... You could see,
In a way, it's already from the ending of your movie, which is beautiful with those lights. I mean, the beginning and the ending, I really like. It's poetic, but at the same time, it's very. I think everybody that watched the movie also can give his own interpretation somehow. But can you maybe tell a little bit about these elements of the lights?
I wanted to have this type of beginning like in a Russian novel, you know, somewhere in a small city on an empty street. And in a way, that was the starting point for the beginning of the film. And afterwards, it was that also that, you know, that saying in during the communists that, you know, Lenin brings the light, you know, the electricity in Russia and in the communist countries, you know, like a joke in a way, you know. Of course, because it was something that's happening also around Christmas, and you have this scene at the end with the tree in the middle of the city.
Yeah. And then also connecting to this tree, I was wondering about the element of Christmas in the film, because to me it seemed always kind of, it gave the whole situation some kind of normality and kind of everyday life feeling, even though it's a seasonal thing, but it had this kind of, yeah, very everyday life feeling. And on the other hand, I felt it was connected always to money and to work. And I was wondering if you could maybe elaborate a bit on that, how you brought the element of Christmas into the film and what was important for you regarding this.
It's happening, you know, it was also the historical fact that the revolution is before, you know, the Christmas. So, and I could play a little bit in a way like the people, they are not much focused in the revolution. They are more focused in their daily lives, what it was going part of them, most of them. And in fact, you have this teacher of history, which had his own obsession. And you see that he didn't adapt it in a way to this new world. And I could play with these two historical moments, you know, and to create a certain type of, let's say, a little bit antagonist between these two elements, you know.
I would like to go back talking about memories. I mean, your memories. Once you moved to Bucharest, somehow, I'm very curious, knowing that there was not a big industry, or there was no industry really, something that we could say Romanian film industry. What were your dreams, or like, how were your friendship? How did you start making films even before this debut? How was the atmosphere from your memories? How would you describe it? If you would make now...
In my school.
In general, about those years when you first started, if you would make like a pitching now for a movie that tells your first years of filmmaking, how would that be?
Without, I won't do that. Never.
And...
No, at that time I was, I was thinking maybe if I would do in my life one or two or three films, I think I was happy, you know, at that time. I wanted to make cinema. So I didn't, I knew it that it would be very, very hard to make it because in the late years of 2000, you know, maybe even in 2001, maybe, and the average, there were two or three movies by year. But after that, in 2003, when I was in last year, I think, in my school, we adopt this law and we create this National Center of Cinema. And we have this law that is mainly imported from France, and we have this system of public financing. So things that were starting to go to develop from that point in another direction. But like student, yes, I was thinking, okay, maybe I will do some advertising, and maybe I will do at one point if I will, I will do a film and maybe two. It was like a dream in a way.
By the way, I invite everyone in the audience, if you're curious, to look at Livius' dream that I think you made right before East of Bucharest, right? Was this
yes.
Right before, which also is a very beautiful film. And if you have the chance to watch it, I highly recommend. I just want to just enlarge talking about a bit also your filmography in general. To me, it seems that film genre, melodrama, police films, and so on, they are kind of present in your cinema, but with a special twist, like you make it very personal, you see it in a very personal way. Yeah, tell us a little about maybe just a banal question about your inspiration. You mentioned something before as well.
It's very different, you know, it's from, in this case, for 12 or 80s of Bucharest, it's, I saw that TV show. For Police Adjective, I read in a paper about a story in which a brother betrayed his brother. And it was for me like an Abel and Cain story, you know, on a history. It was a small drug case like that. And also I had another, I had a friend at one point, which is a police officer, and I was talking with him. At one point he told me about a case that he has it, and he said, well, but I don't want to do that because I will have a hard conscience, you know? And I said, what? And I started to speak with him that he didn't want to solve a case because he didn't want to have this on his conscience. And it was very interesting to speak about that and to see that in a way it was a fight inside him, you know, what is the law, what is this? And that was the starting point for Police Adjective. The Treasure, it's a story of a friend of mine, and we were there to do a documentary, you know. And after that, I said, okay, maybe it's better like fiction. So I think each film has maybe other, yeah.
Tell a story.
Thank you. I think we open now to your questions because Xandra let me know that there are already a few. So please, Xandra, you can call.
So I will ask Mark to address his question, please, followed by Philip.
Salut, Cornelio.
Salut.
I would like to know how is the process of your filming, like the pre-production, the script, and how does it evaluate to the film?
Depends. For this one, for 1208, I had one draft, and I started pre-prep, and I was writing a lot during the... So I have, mainly, let's say, two drafts before shooting. And I was writing a lot during the shooting. For Metabolism, for example, I had nine, maybe 10 drafts. I don't have a method, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, I can say that I'm afraid of that in a way, to be honest, you know. I think each movie has its own life, you know, and you have mainly, you know, when I decided, because in between projects that I made, sometimes I spend maybe 1 year to a project that I never did afterwards. Sometimes, for example, maybe I wrote like 60, 70 pages of a script or two drafts of the script, and after that I throw it to the garbage. So yeah, it's depending a lot, you know.
Thank you.
I have another question. It's just very briefly, I wanted to ask if improvisation is also a part of the work on set or not?
Not so much. Of course, if I feel on the set that, okay, let's improvise some lines or let's do it in another way. But, you know, the problem is that we don't have so much time. We don't have, in fact, so much money. So all the time you are like, and we are, in a way, we are formed like that in the school, you know. And sometimes I have to fight with this because in the school, for example, yeah, we were shooting on 16 millimeters or 35, and we had like, we could make a film at that time. You have like a brute, like 20 minutes for a graduation, you know. So you have, if you, the teachers, they were very afraid, and they said you could, you have 3-1-1, you know, 3 takes on 1. So you start to calculate your home, you know, and to make the movements of the characters. It was crazy, you know, and chronometry that. That's what's happening in the school. So even though that after that we are on digital now, you have much more freedom and sometimes much more money. But sometimes you have this pressure behind, you know. But in some cases, yeah, I prefer to do that more to try other ways or to do, for example, an extra scene, you know, from, I like to do that a lot in casting, okay, to play with more elements. But on the set, normally my films, I shoot them, almost all of them, in 24 days. So okay. At my last one, I have 40 days, 42 days maybe, and 4 weeks for the 40, yeah. 4 weeks, in fact, for the others.
It seems to be kind of common that Romanian movies are shot really fast and in a few days. I hear it very often. It's not a co-production, at least.
No. It's about an industry and the way that you could... the budget that you have it at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's mulțumesc. Yeah.
Merci, show.
Papa.
Papa.
Philip's microphone is not working, so he asked me to read the question for him. So the question is, how did you finance your debut film?
The first one, this one, it was financed by, in fact, I take my family helped me. So it was something that I borrowed money from my father. After that, I didn't give him back because, but yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And the next question, I would like to give the word to Sohei.
Thank you. If I had to describe the movie to someone that hadn't seen the movie, weirdly enough, I would say it's about people searching something that they cannot find, and the melancholy and disappointment which arises from this searching. And the movie as a whole was for me this melancholy of a revolution that is went missing, that people trying to find them that in their lives and they cannot find it. Because of that, it would be very interesting for me to get your perspective about this relationship between the revolution and this the cinema of Romania, and how do you think that the revolution has shaped the contemporary cinema of Romania? Thank you.
That's a hard question because it's more like, I think it's changed in terms of cinema, if you want. If I'm not very into the question, maybe you will help me with other questions. But before, it was a very cinema, it was a propaganda tool during communism. After that, it came this generation in this new format imposed in a way by European Union with the National Center of Cinema, and it started to to grow in this direction. But you know, at the same time, it's not, we can say that there is an industry, you know, so it's more like, yeah, individual people that they try to make their own films, you know. On a personal level, you know, if it was not the revolution, I think I was working in a factory in my hometown, maybe like an engineer. If you at this level, of course, because I was from that region. It's a part of Romania, which is Moldavia. It's in the eastern part of Romania. And normally the people, they go from my high school, they go in a town, which is Iași, to do. And I was studying mathematics. And maybe, I think I was an engineer.
Thank you. I would like to give the word to Francesco to read his to tell his question.
Hello, Cornelio. Hello, everyone. Thank you very much for the invitation and the night, and thank you, Cornelio, for your films. I really like them and admire you. I want to ask about the two films that I've seen from you that I really like. From this one, from 1208 East of Bucharest and The Second Game. Both are in different times, and you play with the medium of cinema in a very different way. But maybe you can introduce the film for the people in the audience that haven't seen it, and how both films dialogue now for you as a filmmaker after the years and with some distance. Thank you.
Thank you. It was the second game. In fact, my father was a football referee, and it's a game. It's a football game between Steaua and Dinamo, played in 1988. Yeah, you see the game, and in the back, me and my father talking about this game. Yeah, that was something. It was started with a TV show that I saw it in Romania. And it's a sort of, they are playing, replaying old games, you know, some short extras from old games. So I was watching TV like that in 2014, maybe. And I was saw at that time this game, you know, and for me it was something that's so personal, something that I forgot, you know, but it was mine in the same time. So I was looking after this game. I had the chance to have it, and I said in the beginning, I said, okay, I will go with this game. I will take I wanted to watch it with my father. I will take a microphone. Maybe it will be like an inspiration for a fiction or something. My relation with the soccer is very, football is very strange, because my father was a very good football, international football referee. But in the same time, you know, I was I received when I was a kid like death threats on the telephone, and in fact, the film is starting with that. So yeah, it was something very, very personal in a way. And okay, I said, okay, I will watch this game with my father. I will record all that, and maybe I will use it in a fiction. But in the same time, during that, I said, okay, maybe this is the film, you know. And it was very personal, and at the same time, very, in a way, like something that, I think I didn't thought till now about this. I didn't link it very well with 1208 East of Bucharest, but maybe you are right, because it's like they have something in common, like a certain type of, maybe melancholy, and in a way, something very strange, maybe.
So Jay has something to add to Sohei's question.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a quick thing, because I think it was really interesting when Sohei asked how did filmmaking, in a sense, change after a revolution? And by the way, when I mentioned, I called it a failed revolution, which I didn't mean to say failed. I think Cornelio put it much, much better when he was talking about how this is a process, of course, and we can't judge revolutions by the immediate decade or more after it happened. You know, once like Pandora's box, once the ideas are out of the box, you can't put it back in. But what I wanted to say is that, as Cornelio pointed out, before the revolution, of course, cinema was used as propaganda, just as it was used throughout all of the Soviet bloc and in many other countries as well. And I think one of the hallmarks, too, of how younger filmmakers after the revolution approach cinema is specifically in how they began to use the image to ensure that audiences didn't feel that they were being manipulated. So what you see is what you get, in a sense. It's stripped down. In Stuff and Dough, for example, you see how the camera is constantly looking at whoever is speaking. So nothing is being hidden from you. And also the use of allegory, which was so popular of necessity under censorship in Soviet times, and not just that, but also in so many of the dictatorships that we have in the world at the moment, how people use that. I think in Romania, that was pushed away because there was a sense that even though there are still enormous problems, even though so many of the people who had been in power or benefited under the Ceausescu regime managed to stay, the idea that allegory isn't needed anymore to address what's happening was also very key.
What German films have you seen recently and how did you like them?
So, to be honest, I haven't seen last year. I don't think I saw. If I don't remember, I think no.
Or maybe a film from any other place, Italy, United States.
United States, yeah. I've seen on Criterion last week, I think, Badlands, which is brilliant. It's huge. Like that, you know, like, and I'm watching Netflix, I'm watching also Criterion, I have, but yeah, one like it pops out like that, it's this one. Just see it recently and it's genius, for my taste.
So I would like to give the word to Adriano.
I was wondering, how was the movie received in Romania back then? And if you expected, I mean, if it was received the way you expected it to be received, or if you were negatively or positively surprised by the way the movie was seen in your country. So, yeah.
I think this movie it was growing in time, you know, because I even now I'm meeting people that I said, oh, okay, I saw that film, it was I like it, and I met one guy that he knew lines, you know, from the film, you know, and he started to tell me what Piszkocz, the old guy, said, you know, there he knew much better than me, you know. So I think the film, in the first moment, you know, we had a very, the film, it was premiered in Cannes, it has Camera d'Or, so yeah, the people they were talking about, it was in the news, the prize, you know, and so on. But in the same time, I think at that time, maybe in all Romania, we have like 70 theaters, maybe. Anyway, let's say 70 is good, you know. So in the same time, people, they didn't go, they didn't have access to the films, you know. So it was a success from because I didn't expect it. I knew the market, I knew the conditions, I knew that the people, they don't go so much. So when you make a film like Romanian director, you don't expect that you will have a thousand of, you know. And all my films, for example, till now, they did three times more in France than in Romania, at least. So, when you have a few theaters and you know that the people, they don't go so much, you don't expect. But this one made a good number for that time, you know. Maybe 20,000, which it was very good. Tickets sold, you know.
Yeah, but if I can add something to my question, do you think it was received as a provocation, and did you mean to provoke something with a certain reaction with this movie?
Of course, no, I didn't want to. I didn't think to provoke something. But what I was questioned also this concept of revolution. That was in my mind in a way, and it was something that, but in a way. It was something that I felt, and it was something necessary for me, if you want. So for me, this type of revolution, like in definition, this concept, like, this romantic, in fact, concept of the revolution, that all it will change the next day and all, doesn't exist. So I was exploring that. I was thinking at this concept. All through the film, you see that each character has another definition, another way of seeing that. I was dealing also with the memory, what means memory, because you don't have access through the flashback to the memories of the characters, because at one point, to be in the history, and each one, in order to survive, you have to be a hero. So all of them, they invent a little bit. All of them, they invent a little bit in their story in order to, for them to survive. So I see it more as a relation between the character and the history, and the way each one of us is in the history, in order to survive, he have to invent his own memory. So, or we have to invent things, you know. So that these were the things that I was interesting to explore in a way in this film.
Tina, please.
Yeah, hi everyone, and thank you for the night and for this program. I only had the chance to watch two of your movies, and interestingly enough, just the first and the last feature film from you. And for me, the first feature film was rather a political movie, which had the question of cinema itself, and which was trying to discover the cinematic qualities. But the last film was, I don't know if it's the right term to use, rather more a commercial kind of movie, which was a genre movie for me. I just wanted to know what are the common things, what are the common qualities between these two movies for you, and what connects these two movies for you? Because to be honest, if I didn't know the director, it would be really hard for me to guess that these two movies are from the same director.
Maybe I have two obsessions. Maybe one is language and the other one is freedom, you know. I think The Whistlers also is dealing with that, my last film, you know, maybe that's the link in a way. But it's hard for me from inside to really look, because I think each, for example, like from Metabolism, and maybe after that The Treasure, which is like a fabula, you know, I start to go into another direction. For me, it's not, you know, it's, of course, if you look now at the two of them, they are very different. But in the same time, I think it's also a certain type of journey in between them. And also I like to work on documentaries. I made this type of, it's much to say a documentary, because in fact, the second game, it's, you see a football game, you know, and you hear a dialogue between me and my father, and we are watching. It's quite unpredictable. And I made also another documentary. So I like a lot to play. For me, more and more, you know, it's like, in my mind, I'm trying to find the best way to tell that story or that particular subject. And after that, I'm very open with the form, you know, because like directors, no, we have two questions, no? What to say and how you say it. So for me, every time when I'm trying and I have a subject, I have something that I'm interested in, after that, I'm trying to be very, very open with the, because if you ask me, for example, like, 5 years ago, if you will do flashbacks in your films, I think I will. I told you at that time, no, I will never do that. But for The Whistlers, for example, I wanted to make a story which has in the center the language. No, there is a character who's going on the island to learn a language in order to do something bad. But this language is becoming something essential for him. So making that, after that, I start to build with flashbacks, because in a way, the storyline imposed me the structure. So with 1280s of Bucharest, of course, it's a structure like two acts in a way, because there are two parts, no? You see that, and it's the TV. And after that, when I did that, I said, okay, but I need to reinforce that with a certain type of free, something to have behind it, like the main character, the TV guy, and to have something that it will reinforce that structure, you know? So each subject in a way has his own way of, a particular way to thinking that I, in a way, I like to do that, you know? But what I'm trying first is what I want to say. And after that, I'm thinking a lot, I have doubts sometimes, even in the shooting, you know, if is that the best way to telling it, you know, even that it's a movement of camera, even that it's a line of the character.
I would like to ask one last question to you, Cornelio, which is kind of imposed by the film. And that question would be, where were you on December 22nd, 1989 at 12:08?
I was playing ping pong with a friend of mine. when we went home, it was, yeah. But at 12:08, I was not so good, but okay.
And whereabouts in Romania was that? In your hometown or?
Yeah, I was 13 years old.
14.
So I was with that friend in a place where we have this type of exterior tables, you know, and you could play it. And we are going there quite often.
Now we have one more question from Adrian.
Thank you that I have the opportunity to ask this. Now, because you were saying that in a way, every character, of course, is lying and is adding a little bit of something on their own story, because they have to invent a little bit their own story. And I was only wondering if you, while working on this movie with the actors, if you agreed on one true story, like if you had the need to agree on one version, which is the true one, and then everybody had their own lives, or if this was not necessary in a way that everybody, you didn't have really to agree on which was actually the truth, which one was actually the truth.
At one point we were speaking, I was speaking with the actor, which was playing the teacher. And we were speaking, of course, I was speaking with him in a way, and I, because, it was at the first level, I think the actor, he doubled, you know, he said, I will lie, you know, and I said, no, it's not a lie. You don't lie here. You try to survive, and it's 90% is the truth. And of course you have to talk about that. And after that we talk, okay, but you will invent it. You like character, you like human being sometimes if you are trying to do that, you know, or you are Hamlet every day, you know, because they are dreaming like theatrical actors to play Hamlet. So yeah, we talk about that with him mainly, because it was and we spoke and we have the timeline of that day. We for him, you know, when he went, when he arrived to the piazza and the square and all.
What are your next projects that you're working on?
Now I'm more in a reading mode. I'm reading quite a lot, and I don't have a subject. Let's say I don't have I have a few bits from a story, but nothing clear yet.
Thank you so much for those questions. I would like to ask Jay if he would like to add something as a last thing.
Yeah, thanks, Paolo. As a critic, I want to add one more thing, is that one of the elements of Cornelius' films that I enjoy and appreciate so much is precisely how diverse his approach is, and at the same time, the centrality, as he was saying, of language and freedom remains a constant. So the way that he's using different forms is always exciting. The idea of going to a Cornelio Porumboyo film and not knowing what you're going to get in terms of the exterior, shall we say. I mean, you know, there gets a certain point when you watch a Dardenne film and you're tired of seeing the person's back of their fucking heads. You know, this is something, we just, you know, stop it, okay? Move on, do something else, do something that's going to make me feel like you're developing, like you're doing something new, rather than the same kind of film, no matter how emotionally involved we get in them, no matter how moved we are by them. With Corneliu, the core is there. What's inside is there. It's just the fact that he's able to change that visually, how he changes the approach to get to those elements is what's so exciting. That's all I wanted to add.
Because all the time, you know, I feel that, for example, I have all my films, in a way, they open a door for my next one, you know? Oh, it's happening sometimes like that. I have a theme, for example, from The Treasure. I like this theme of the garden, you know? But I feel that it is not, I want it to develop in another way, you know? And you could see it in The Whistlers. So all the time I have the feeling that it's something I didn't accomplish, or each movie that I make maybe open another door. And maybe I realize, okay, this I didn't make. Okay, I passed through. Yeah, I could do something. And they are linked in a way. Yeah, maybe sometimes visual, sometimes like a scenographic theme, sometimes like a story. And that is, in the end, that it's interesting, you know, because we'll never do a perfect film, but the journey is, no.
So I would say that we will call it a night, and we thank you again, Corneliu, for being with us. And I want to thank again all the filmmakers that come to 35K and that can make those events possible.
I hope so, indeed. Times. Yeah, please.
And thank you, Jay, again for your very nice, fresh introduction. I hope we can catch up with you some other times. Jana, yes. Would you like to add something?
No, I can just repeat what Paolo says. It was a pleasure. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I hope it was
thank you.
My English, it was understandable.
Perfect.
Thank you, Jay. Maybe we'll see you soon somewhere.
I hope so, indeed. Yeah.
Thank you, everyone.
We hope you liked this episode. 35K is a donation-based platform. If you'd like to support us or to attend our conversations, please check our show notes or our webpage. 35-k.de. See you next time.